Hey, sweetie, what's wrong? Long day? No, I'm sorry. Is anything I can do? Or you just want to get to sleep, don't you? Well, listen, I can help with that. Come here. Come on. Head in my lap. Come here. This way. And get to stroke that beautiful hair. Nice, calming strokes. Do you think that'll help? Good. Maybe if I run my nails over your scalp, just nice and lightly, relieve some of that tension. That's it. You feeling any better? Well, you just settle in. You can fall asleep right here. You want me to talk you to sleep? I can do that. What would you like to hear about? Why don't I tell you all about the Gulf of California? Or the Sea of Cortez. It's this gorgeous, gorgeous place. You know, between Baja California and mainland Mexico. It's this long, kind of narrow, deep, deep gulf. The Colorado River used to flow into the delta at the top of the gulf, right by the border to the US and Mexico. But the southwest of the U.S. takes so much water from the Colorado River that there's very little water still flowing down into the Gulf. So what once used to be an estuarine system with a big river delta and a marshland and this gradient of salinity that moved south from that delta all the way down to where the Gulf opens up on the Pacific. And that all changed. And the ecosystem is completely different now. See, it's an incredibly, incredibly deep gulf. It's got a fault line running down the middle of it. It's kind of the continuation of the San Andreas Fault before it connects up with the Pacific Ridge. So while it gets, earthquakes, they're all so deep that it's nothing like the San Andreas Fault at all. And I don't know if you remember this from, all that biology class in school, but, you know, deep water is cold water, and cold water is productive water. So there's all this cold, nutrient-rich water in this protected, secluded little gulf. And because of it, it's so incredibly diverse. And so many species of whales go in there. Humpback whales, gray whales, fin whales. Sometimes orca go in there. And you would think, because it's pretty narrow, almost the entire way across, you can see the land on the other side, that you wouldn't get those big, big animals. But you do. Some people have seen blue whales in there. And it's gorgeous. The water is freezing cold, but so blue. Not like the clear greeny blue that you get on the other side of Mexico, you know, in the Caribbean. It's sapphire blue. And, oh, two species of dolphins swim in there. The common dolphin and the bottlenose. And they form super pods. So thousands of dolphins traveling together. And it's all because there's so much fish. You get hammerhead sharks and thresher sharks and a couple other species. All of this life in this tiny, tiny little area. And there are manta rays and bat rays and stingrays too. And they travel in these huge, especially the manta rays, these huge, huge schools. And while they're traveling, I'm sure you've seen pictures, the rays launch themselves out of the water, several feet up, just flying and flap crazily and slap back down on the water. And the crazy thing is, we don't really know why. It's possibly a mating display, but we don't have any proof as to whether only males do it or only females. What's more likely is it's probably to rid parasites that slapping back down on the water like that removes sea lice or any other kind of little critter hitching a ride. But it's so cool to see, because the water there isn't super clear, but it's clear enough that you can, from a boat, look down and see thousands and thousands of rays surrounding you. You know, stacked on top of each other in layers. And every once in a while, one will just break the surface and then flop back down on top of the other rays. And they'll do it over and over again. It's really incredible to watch. And there's all sorts of seabirds there. There's blue-footed boobies and brown boobies, terns, and several species of gulls, and they all gather there because of all the fish. And there are these rocky islands that are just, you know, cracks and ridges jutting up out of the water that are pure white, like dazzling to look at. And that's because it's a nesting colony for all these birds, and it's covered in guano, and it smells disgusting. And if you get too close, then your boat gets swarmed with all the little flies that gather, and it's just this riotous mash of birds crying out and leaving and returning, and there's usually a small colony of sea lions somewhere around the little island as well, and they're barking. There's just so much life in such a small, almost forgotten part of the world. And when the fish come in, the sardines and the other small bait fish come in these huge schools of tens of thousands of little fish. You get these bait balls because the whales and the dolphins and the larger fish, like some tuna species, and the sharks, they're all swimming, circling, and forcing this school of fish tighter and tighter, pushing them up to the surface so they can eat them, and then the birds start swarming, and this calamity in this 50 square feet, not much more, of birds dive fishing and dolphins breaking the water, and every once in a while this huge whale will come, you know, piercing up out of the middle with its mouth wide open, capturing all the fish or the krill or anything it can. And it's really, it's extraordinary to watch. And the people that live there are so connected, you know, it's the part of Mexico that's just desert, and you have these rolling dunes in the desert of this dry sand with cacti and sparse bush and these desert hills just turn right into sand dunes, and that sand just washes right out into the super productive water versus this completely dry, not barren, but almost uninhabitable land. And people thrive there. And there's the Seri Indians, and they're one of the only indigenous groups in Mexico that, you know, they're known as the fiercest warriors because they fought off the Spanish and then the Mexicans. They maintained their independence, and even now they're a population of less than 1,000, and they live primarily in this really small spot halfway up the mainland of Mexico on the coast called Punta Chueca. And they were given the land, and they were given rights to the water because there's this channel just off of Punta Chueca between the mainland and this island. And the channel isn't very wide, maybe 40 or 50 yards, and it doesn't get very deep, maybe, you know, 50 feet at most, but a lot of it is sandy bottom with eelgrass and, you know, 15 to 30 feet deep. And they were given that island and that channel by the Mexican government because they never gave in. They fought for their independence so hard, to the point that they're now, you know, this dying out culture of less than 1,000 people. But they're so proud. Very few of them speak Spanish. They have their own dialect, which is their own language, which is completely distinct from any other indigenous language in the area. It's, no one knows where it came from because it shares no common characteristics with anything there. And they fish and they live and they go fishing for pen shells, which are bay scallops, these big scallop clams that filter feed off of the bottom. And what they do is these shells can be, you know, 7 or 8 inches long, maybe 4 or 5 inches wide, in an almost inverted triangle shape. And they sit, these pen shells sit in the sand, the soft sand of that channel, and they have their shells open barely, maybe not even an inch, just at the surface, and they're sucking in water and filtering out nutrients and pushing it back out. And what these Seri people do is they get a little dinghy, and they get a air compressor that they've nailed onto a piece of wood, and they attach this long length of hose to the air compressor, and on the end of that hose they attach a regulator from a scuba gear, so the mouthpiece, and they, you know, the air compressor is attached to the generator, and they pull start the generator, and it starts compressing air down this hose, and a man will go in wearing, you know, rain boots and some sort of wetsuit. He'll have a scuba mask, and he'll put the regulator in. He's got a weight belt, and they have these nets that are these wide, this metal hoop that's maybe about a foot and a half across, with a net hanging down off of it and a rope. And they hang the rope over their neck so the hoop hangs down in front of them. And they will just jump off the boat, sink down to 30 feet of water with just this air compressor pumping air through this common, you know, plastic hose down to them. And they have these metal fish hooks that they bring down with them, and they walk along the bottom, and they'll see the opening of a pen shell, and they stick their hook in, and the pen shell closes around it. They pull it up, pull the hook out, drop it into their net, and keep walking. And they will stay down for half an hour at a time, and someone's up on the boat, and they pass the full net back up to the boat because it's attached to a line, and then a new one is brought down to them, or is sent down to them. And they just keep walking, and they do that all day. And, you know, there's people living in the Sari village who are in wheelchairs because they got the bends. They had nitrogen bubbles, you know, compression, and it, because they came up too fast, or they'd been down too long. They're paralyzed because of it, but that's the way they live. That's the only way they can get to these fish. They don't have the fancy equipment. They can't dredge the bottom, and it's also, it's safe. It's better for the environment. You know, they're not raking the ground. They're taking care of the only livelihood they have. And the Sari women are dedicated. They'll be out there, they'll keep watch to make sure that no family is taking shells from their family's plot of the channel. And the women will also carve these gorgeous sculptures out of called Mexican ironwood. It's this very, very dense, very dark wood that comes from a tree that takes forever to grow in the desert. And the tree is so difficult to find because it was harvested for sculptures and lumber. And they carve these beautiful, beautiful figures that are, they smooth them down, and it's what they see around them. They carve birds and fish and whales and sea lions. And there's a couple other indigenous groups, but the Sari are just so independent. They have their own life. And there's all these tiny fishing communities of that aren't even indigenous people, just Mexican, you know, people living off of the Gulf of California. There's another one of those small craggy islands that is just maybe 40 feet across, just this little circle island. And it's got a cliff face on one side, and then that's 40 feet high, and then it slopes down to a tiny little beach on the other side. And on that slope, there are about 30 huts, palapas, which are open-sided huts with a thatch roof, and cinder block homes, and 60 people live on this tiny little island, and it's mostly one family, and fishing is their way of life. They have one tiny, tiny little beach, but they process all this fish. And they have one tiny little school on the island. And, you know, it would take them 45 minutes just to get to land but 2 hours to get to even the nearest tiny little city, and it would be, I think, 4 or 5 hours by boat to get to La Paz, which is the biggest island, which is the biggest city in the area, and it's at the south of Baja California. And those tiny fishing communities are dotted all over, and they know the area so well. They know the history of when their great-grandparents first moved to the town they live in, and everyone is family, you know, by choice or by birth out there. It's a very different way of life. And it's just so beautiful. I wish you could see it. You can camp on these small enclosed little beaches, and it's a little cold at night, but you don't need a tent. You can wrap up in a sleeping bag right there on the beach and fall asleep, staring up at the stars and listen to the water lap at the beach 10 feet away from you. You can hear crickets and the wildlife and the birds and the wind. There's just so much. And there's no light pollution, so the stars are just, they look closer when you're down there. When there's no light fading them out, it looks like while you're lying there, you could reach up and almost touch them. It's the perfect way to fall asleep. And it seems like maybe you've fallen asleep too. Good night, my sweet. Dream of faraway places.